Welcome to Technology and Friends. My guest today is Nick Landry. Nick, how are you?
Hey, David. Good to see you.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Third time, right?
Third time, yeah.
All right. You get a special card when you host it over five times.
Yeah, I think it's five, right? Like SNL, when you host it five times,
exactly.
You join a special club with a robe.
Maybe the 500th episode, I'll invite everybody who's been on five times.
That would be great.
To a special, have a drink of brandy with me. I don't know.
Totally, yeah.
What are we going to talk about today?
Well, you know what? There's a question that I get all the time. I speak at a lot of big Microsoft .NET shows or shows where there's a lot of .NET developers, like VS Live, for example. And one question that I get a lot is, what's the difference between .NET Framework and .NET Core?
You know, I have a question. What's the difference between .NET Framework and
.NET Core? Yeah, so that's basically one of the things I want to cover today, because it was at Connect 2014 that we announced the new .NET Core. This is when .NET basically went open source.
And when .NET big difference right there.
Yeah, so .NET went open source, .NET went cross-platform, basically working on Windows, Linux, and Mac. Yeah. So basically, a lot of people got excited, but then they started looking at, they went to the .NET page, for example, if you go to Microsoft.com/net, that's the .NET homepage. And then they still see like .NET Framework 4.6, and this is basically what shipped with Windows.
Okay.
And then for a while, we actually had this ASP.NET 5.
That's now been rebranded.
Yeah, and .NET Core 5. So now that's been rebranded completely. So in a nutshell, we have two main streams of .NET. Two, I don't want to say fork, but basically two versions of .NET.
Okay.
There's the full .NET Framework, the one that we've been growing up with for the past, 14 years, basically. That basically was announced in 2000 at PDC, and then got shipped for the first time in 2002. That was .NET 1. Mm-hmm. Then after that, we got .NET 1.1, then .NET 2, then we got 3, 3, 5, 4.
That was easy to understand. It was just the numbers just kept getting bigger.
Exactly. So that's the full framework. That's the version that only runs on Windows. And that's still the story today, by the way.
Yeah.
So this is a fully supported version of .NET that runs on Windows.
4.6. So
4.6, yes. Well, the latest version as of this recording right now is 4.6.1,
okay.
Which is the version, if I remember correctly, that came out with the November update of Windows 10, and which is the 15.11 update. So that version of .NET is, if you're used to working with .NET, that's your de facto version you're going to be using for your production applications. It's fully supported. It is entirely under the control and build of Microsoft, basically.
Yep.
So the .NET team is still working on that and making fixes, adding new features. And but then there's this new work stream that's been created. And this new work stream is what we call now .NET Core 1. It used to be called .NET Core 5 for a while, but now, because it's basically a new version of .NET, and that runs cross-platform, that is open source, it felt that it was more appropriate to actually announce it as actually a new number. So Scott Hanselman actually did a great blog post about this to announce the new branding.
Okay.
And I just want to kind of demystify this for people.
Yeah, okay. So I think one way I heard said was that this is actually .NET Core version 1, to be distinct from .NET 4.7,
for example. This is not .NET Framework 1. That was something that came in 2002.
Right, but it's the first version of this new thing.
Exactly. This is version 1.
The other ones, they had a lot of backwards compatibility. The things that worked in earlier versions of .NET almost always worked when a new framework came out.
Right. So, for example, over time, we had different versions of the CLR. So there was version 1 that was in 1 and 1.1, version 2 of the CLR, which was actually used for .NET 2, 3, and 3.5.
Right.
There was no new CLR in 3 and 3.5. And then after that, we got the CLR 4, and then that's been the same version. So that's why every version of 4, 4.5, 4.5.1, 4.5.2, 4.6, and 4.6.1 are basically in-place updates that basically replace the .NET framework that was there. So you can technically have a machine that has .NET 2 and .NET 4.6 on the same box, but you cannot run .NET 4.6 and .NET 4.5 on the same box, because 4.6 is an in-place replacement for 4.5.
I see. Okay.
So, and while they're in-place replacements, they're supposed to be fully compatible, but yeah, it can happen that some things, you know, you have to test them. And I do know of some customers that sometimes they tell us, like, yeah, we can't just like jump to the new one because we have to do some regression testing
and
retest our thing. So what is .NET Core then? .NET Core, the first thing you have to understand is this is not the full framework. It's a subset of the full .NET framework. Mm. So it's a version that is open source, cross-platform, runs on Linux, Windows, and Mac. And it basically includes a lot of the common classes that you would expect in a full framework. But you have to think about all the things that normally would be kind of implicit to Windows, like a strong dependency on Windows. So things like ASP.NET itself, although there is, of course, ASP.NET Core does run on .NET Core, but things like WPF and WinForms and ADO.NET.
These are things that are not part of the core.
These are things that are not part of the core.
Because not every application is going to use WPF. Not every application is use those when those.
But these are Windows technologies.
Right.
So since you're going to be building for Windows in a traditional enterprise sense, you know, of the word, then you're still going to use .NET Framework 4.6 for that.
I see. Okay.
Whereas .NET Core is a it's been built for very very specific workloads. So first of all, it's a very cloud friendly version of .NET. So if you think of .NET Core and ASP.NET Core, which used to be called ASP.NET 5. But has been rebranded to ASP.NET Core 1. It's a much more like lightweight, modular version of ASP.NET running on .NET Core. And what that means is that whenever, since we live in a world now, we don't even run in VMs anymore. We live in microcontainers and in Docker. And we can actually run ASP.NET, you know, on Linux and Docker. And that means that you want to really, really streamline your resources. And the full framework comes like as one big package. Your app doesn't basically ship with it. You install it separately if it's not already there. Whereas with .NET Core, everything is a NuGet package. So you can go and pick and choose whichever like components you want out of the framework, and you only carry what you need. So that means you're going to be running a much leaner version of .NET with your application, which is very friendly for the cloud when you might want to spin up like thousands of instances maybe of your application or microcontainers and things like that.
Oh, sure. Or if you want to deploy to local devices and drag those deployment packages down. Dragging the entire .NET framework is a daunting task. That's a huge package to bring down.
Well, you would never ship the .NET framework. It was always something
we didn't have to with Windows because it was in Windows
already. It was in Windows.
But it's not on Mac. It's not on Linux.
Yeah,
or you would get it there somehow.
Or it would trigger another installer that would say, okay, now we're installing the .NET framework, and that's an installer that comes from Microsoft.
Right.
So when I talk about specific workloads, though, there's a few specific things you can build with ASP.NET, well, with .NET Core today. So there's web apps with ASP.NET Core. And then there's console applications, so your traditional little console app that spits out to the command line. So that's something that you can run on, again, on Windows, on Linux, and on Mac. And then there's another branch which is kind of part of UWP.
So Universal Windows Platform?
Yeah, the Universal Windows Platform. Since UWP is basically not a .NET application, it is a UWP application. It is running on top of a brand new API that first started with Windows 8 under the name WinRT, and now under Windows 10 is called UWP. So this is kind of like the successor to Win32 on Windows. And when you build a UWP app, you're building basically against the native API of Windows. And what that means is when you write your code, of course, you're still using things like C Sharp, XAML, VB, or for example, well, XAML with C Sharp, with VB, F Sharp, or C++. Now, what that means is whenever you're, if you want to use .NET compatible code, there is a .NET profile for UWP, which again is a subset of .NET, which pretty much closely matches .NET Core. So that means .NET Core code can then run either in an ASP.NET application, in a console app, or as part of a UWP application. But of course, when you're building it, you're targeting all these things separately. So when you're creating a UWP app, you are definitely targeting this, but you're allowed to use that subset of .NET that matches .NET Core.
It sounds a little bit like a portable class library, but it's different, right?
Well, portable class libraries were introduced, what, 4 years ago, I think, to address a problem where over time, we've seen multiple versions of .NET emerge. So it all started with the full framework. But then, I don't know if you remember, in the 2000s, we actually had something called the .NET Compact Framework, which was a subset of the full framework specifically made for Windows CE and Windows mobile devices,
right,
and pocket PCs and smartphones. That was before, you know, the iPhone and Windows Phone and Android era. And then we got Silverlight. Silverlight shipped with its own version of .NET, which with its own CLR.
So these things, these other frameworks were not binary compatible.
They were not binary compatible,
The standard, I'll call it, .NET framework.
Exactly. So there were some classes you could use that are part of .NET, and others were just not there. So for example, in Silverlight, all the stuff attached to WPF and WinForms was not there. It was its own version of the CLR. Then later, we got Windows Phone came out in 2010 with its own SDK, which was using the Silverlight model. And that one, again, introduced its own version of the CLR, its own version of .NET. And then we also have our friends at Xamarin over the years that have been building the Mono framework,
yep.
which is technically the first open source version of .NET. And that basically created another .NET profile. Their profile actually is much closer to the full framework than, for example, .NET Core.
Hmm.
So because their subset of .NET that they cover is actually much bigger than the one found in .NET Core. And a lot of people have been asking, does that mean that Mono is going to go away? Or not at all, actually. The Mono team at Xamarin and the .NET team at Microsoft, they're working hand in hand to basically have a common goal of having .NET open source, but one is not supposed to necessarily replace the other.
Hmm.
You've got the smaller, modular, streamlined version that is .NET Core 1, and then you have the larger version of .NET, which is Mono, that is open source, and that is meant to be kind of a replacement for the full framework, but not directly compatible, because you still don't get things like WPF or WinForms, but they have equivalents for that in Mono.
I see.
So to answer your question about portable class libraries, what that means is that whenever you would create, for example, the DLL, you had to choose which version of .NET you were targeting with your DLL. So of course, if you were targeting the big framework, full framework, then you could sometimes use it across different versions of .NET because, for example, version 2 would still work with 4.5, but not the other way around, of course. But if you were building a DLL for a Silverlight app, you would then not be able to use it in a WPF app.
It wouldn't be able to set a reference to that.
DLL. Exactly. It would not recognize it because .NET was strongly versioned to avoid the problems we had in the 90s with COM and DLL Hell.
Mm.
So portable class libraries basically said, well, you know what? We're going to let you in Visual Studio create this library that can target multiple profiles of .NET, multiple versions of .NET. And then what Visual Studio, the compiler, and IntelliSense did is analyze all the different profiles you're targeting, and then only giving you access to the subset of .NET that is common to all of those versions. So that means if there's a certain namespace or class, or sometimes even method, it could be very, very granular. If there's something that's available in one version of .NET and not in the other, it is not available in your PCL.
If you chose to target both of those frameworks, right?
If you target both. So you would then, so when you create a PCL, you go right-click your project, and then you can see a drop-down that shows you all the different versions of .NET you can target, including if you have Xamarin on your machine, you can actually see like Xamarin.Android, Xamarin.iOS, full framework with multiple versions, UWP and WinRT from like Windows Store, like 8, 8.1, or UWP 10, Windows Phone, 8, 8.1. So you would see all these different versions. You check which ones you want, and then IntelliSense and the compiler will only accept that you write code that's compatible with all of them.
Right.
So you can't do, for example, poundif something, because you're building one single library that gets compiled once, so no conditional compilation in this.
Mm, okay.
So 100% of the code has to be compatible. But the cool thing is once you've built this library, you can then, if you say I've targeted the full framework and I've targeted UWP, for example, and I also targeted a .NET Core. That means now I can use this library with a WPF project running on 4.6. I can use it with a Windows 10 UWP app running the latest update from November, and I can also use it with an ASP.NET application running on Linux with .NET Core.
Nice.
So that's, yeah, it's very powerful. It's very cool to actually use portable class libraries for this, and definitely, .NET Core is a step in the right direction. I mean, over time, I assume that the team is going to keep adding functionality to it.
Okay.
And because it's so lightweight, I think a lot of people are going to find it very practical for their architectures.
Now, is this available today?
Oh, yeah, of course. So .NET Core was first introduced at Connect 2014.
Okay.
So that's more than a year ago. And then over the year, they basically started adding more features to it. And it started as a preview, a beta. And then it reached release candidate stage. And now we actually have, at Connect 2015, a few months ago, they actually announced the first release candidate of ASP.NET Core and .NET Core. And what that means, and it even comes with a Go Live license.
Hmm.
So that means now it's not just a preview technology you can experiment with. You can actually go and deploy projects with this, and Microsoft will support you.
Give me some guidance as to whether I should be using the .NET Core framework or the I'll call it the traditional .NET 4.6.
The full framework, basically
.NET framework. When do I choose? When I go to the Visual Studio, say File New Project, I have to make that choice at that time.
Right. So, well, first of all, it's going to be the type of application you're building. So if your application is not a console app or ASP.NET app, immediately then it means it's full framework you have to go for. So if you're still a WinForms developer or a WPF developer, then definitely or you have to stick with the full framework. Mm. Again, if you're just going to be building for Windows as well, you might as well, if you're already familiar with the full framework, you might as well stay there. But let's say you're an ASP.NET developer, and now you want to decide if you want to use ASP.NET running on .NET Core, and also the latest version of ASP.NET can also run on the full framework, so you have a choice to make there. The question is going to be, first of all, where do you want to run your application? If you see yourself running it only on the Windows servers, then the full framework is still an option for you. However, if you say, you know what, I'm probably going to run it maybe on Linux, which is, of course, a very popular server platform, or maybe running it in the cloud, in micro containers, and I really, really want to streamline my environment so that I don't have to spin up very large VMs to host my code. Mm. And if really, really having a very lightweight environment to basically scale as much as I want without incurring high costs, then I would say ASP.NET Core 1 would be a great choice for that. So.
Excellent. Is there anything we haven't talked about that we should have?
Well, there's a lot of other things. So there's if people are more interested in this, we can put some links in the show notes because there's been some presentations that have been done by, for example, Jay Schmelzer has done some great talks at Build and at Connect. So, and I know Scott Hanselman has talked about this topic a lot as well. So we can put some links to that as well. They can go check out the .NET page. The other thing to remember
.NET
also
page is at Microsoft.com/net.
Microsoft.com/net. Yes. Okay. And the other thing to remember also is that there's a common set of components that are available. So things like the new Ryujet compiler, that is the new 64-bit compiler for .NET. Hmm. That's common to both. So it benefits both the full framework and also .NET Core.
Okay.
Things like all the new language innovations in the new C#, for example, C# 7, and then also in the new VB. I forget what version is the last version of VB. It's a super high number. Right. Same thing with F# as well, with F# 4. All of the innovations at the language level also affect both .NET Core and full .NET developer. So that means whether you're an ASP.NET developer on Linux or whether you're a WPF developer on Windows, you can benefit from all of these innovations as well. So it's really cool because we get to innovate in one place that affects the entire market. And we have a lot of .NET users out there.
Yeah.
Jay Schmelzer has shared at Build 2014 that whenever they would push an update to .NET, there would be 1.4 billion machines that would come and fetch those updates.
Wow.
So .NET is
billion with a B.
Yeah, a billion with a B, yes. 1.4 billion machines. And that's a number that's at least a year old. I have to ask Jay what's the latest one on this one, because there's over 1.5 billion machines in the world running Windows. And obviously, virtually all of them are running something with .NET. And if they're fetching an update, these are active machines that are connected and basically running something that people care about and use actively on a daily or monthly basis.
Absolutely. I happen to know that you are writing extensively about this and other topics at your blog.
Yeah, so if you want to follow what I do, you can follow me on Twitter at ActiveNick. You can also come to my blog at ageofmobility.com. And my GitHub is github.com/ActiveNick.
Nick, thank you so much.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
And thank you for watching Technology and Friends.
Over the years, I've relocated from Canada down to the United States. I've lost touch with a lot of my friends, but fortunately, technology has always been there for me.